away you go. Look what I caused. The brains all leave the platform. My name is Chuck C., and I'm an alcoholic. Quite often, the worst comes first. There's much of the language that I hear in Alcoholics Anonymous nowadays that I disapprove of very violently. And I'm presently about to use one of the words. It has to do with the male alligator. The male alligator sort of follows the female around and digs up and eats most of the eggs that she lays. Now, huh? What do you want me to do? Now, I've patted. Maybe I won't have to pat anymore. And maybe I will. And personally, I don't give a damn. Oh! There's another one of those words. But I'm talking about the male alligator eating up the eggs. And when the professor made that statement, the little boy popped up on his feet and he says, "Thank God for the male alligator. If it weren't for the male alligator, we would all be up to our ass in alligators by now." That's a word I don't like. But it makes a point. We come along first, us drunks. Now, last year, I got to follow my wife. She talked and prepared the way for me. This time, I'm first to prepare the way for her. And here I am using bad words. You know? But meaningful. You see, if it weren't for us, there would not be any Al-Anon. Now, I got by with that pretty well for a while, and then pretty soon I got back. If it weren't for you, there wouldn't be any need for alcohol, for Al-Anon. So, we did come first. And it's our program that we've loaned to you. And don't forget it. Al-Anon, Al-Anon, Saddies Anonymous. Thank you. Thank you twice. Gamblers Anonymous. Addicts Anonymous. Neurotics Anonymous. And Al-Anon and Al-Anon. All come out of Alcoholics Anonymous. And we have given you all permission to use our program. We feel very magnanimous in this because, you see, we didn't have to give it to you. You took it. When we found out you already had it, we gave it to you. But it's a good thing. I'm convinced that all of the things I mentioned have nothing to do with alcohol, or overeating, or over-gambling. I think that the whole batch of us who are using this program of ours have a living problem. And if we live the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, we find a living answer. What do I mean by that? Simply this. That as far as I am able to perceive, there's only one reason that I'm not drunk tonight. Just one. There's not two, there's just one. I'm not drunk tonight because I found what I was looking for in the bottle. And what was I looking for? I was looking for a way to live comfortably, peacefully, and joyously with myself. I had looked for it for 43 years and had not looked for it for 6 years when I found it. After being a part of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, for 6 years, I discovered that I had a God of my very own. Wherever I am, He is. The greatest discovery of my life. And it comes out of doing the things that our program suggests that we do so that we won't have to drink anymore. It comes out, it's a byproduct. Now, I look for God all my life, practically. Has anybody ever heard me say? I was born in a family that's too poor to pay it and too proud to whitewash. Half of that family was Hardshell Baptist. Half of it was Methodist Church South. Than which there ain't nothing whicher. And I was conditioned to believe that all of us get here struck out. In my background, you didn't have to get saved to go to heaven. You had to get saved to keep from going to hell. Because we got here struck out. And it happened to be the product or the cause of all this was the original sin. The original sin. There were five of us in my family. I was third. We came boy, girl, boy, girl, boy, girl. And I was number three. So there were two older and three younger than I. And we decided that we ought to know why this original sin and what it was. So we tried to find out. And they wouldn't tell us. And we decided that it was naughty. They'd have told us if it weren't something naughty or bad. So we figured out for ourselves what it was. We figured that it had something to do with Adam rearranging Eve's leaves. Now, maybe you don't think so, but I still think we were closer to it than they were. But I think it's cruel. I think it's wicked to teach kids that we get here struck out. You know? That we're sinners. We're lost. Until we get saved. That's what I was told. So at 13, I tried to get saved. They scared me bad enough that I really tried. And I didn't make it. And for the next 30 years, I studied, I became a very devout student of religion and philosophy. And I became an expert. In our society, not in Al-Anon, but in our society, we have a definition for an expert. X is a has-been, and spurt is a drip under pressure. So I became an expert in religion and philosophy. I even had the excuse of going to the bar to inform the boys that were drinking too much that there was an answer. And I got by pretty well until I fell off the bar stool. Now, if you're talking to monkeys in the bar about answers, and you fall off of the bar stool and can't get back up on it, you lose your credibility. So I was known as the drunken deacon for about 11 years before I got here. The drunken deacon. I had answers for everybody but me. So, 11 years before I got to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, I became a periodic. Because I was not going to be beaten by a bottle. The bottle could not beat me. I had never once admitted defeat in my life. I had never admitted defeat one time. And I certainly wasn't going to admit that a bottle had beaten me. So I became a periodic. And for 11 years, I was as dry as them tonight between every two drunks. But I always got drunk again. But my last time out was something I have never run into yet. And if any of you have the same experience, I would like for you to tell me about it. Because I've never run into it yet. My last trip to the well started Friday before Christmas, 1945. Now, lately, I found out by my black son from San Bernardino that Friday before Christmas, 1945, came on the 21st day of December. I never knew that till recently. I knew it was the Friday before Christmas. But I didn't know what day it was. It started the Friday before Christmas. So I had 10 days left in December and 18 days in January that are not in my experience. I remember absolutely nothing. From the Friday before Christmas, 45, to the middle of January, 46. Now, I had to be functional because I had to get my liquor. For some reason or other, my wife or my kids wouldn't get it for me. So I had to get it, and I got it. Because I stayed drunk, dead drunk, for 28 days. That's 4 weeks in my calculation. I remember nothing. Thank God. Because if I remembered anything, I think I'm smart enough to figure out a way to take credit for my last 36 years and 10 months. But not being able to remember anything that happened, I can't take credit for it. But I came to the 18th or thereabouts of January 1947 with all my I wants gone and all my excuses gone. You see, in the first 43 years of my life, I never made a mistake. There was always some place for me to point the finger. It was your fault. It was her fault. She's too pretty to be married to that bum that she's married to, too. This one. Somebody to blame. It was your fault. It was the system's fault. It was my wife's fault. But more than that, it was her mother's fault. Her mother had only one kid, and I was married to her. And the last 5 years of our drinking, she was living with us. And she had a grandstand seat watching me crucify her own daughter and her own grandchildren. And she didn't like me very good, and I didn't like her that good. Because if she hadn't been living with us, I wouldn't have had to crucify her daughter. So it was her fault. But when I woke it up in January the 18th or thereabouts, my excuses were gone. There was no place to point the finger. I didn't know exactly why then. I know why now. Because somehow or another, when I came to, I did not believe in a God of judgment, of punishment and reward. I believed in a God of love and a great law of justice without judgment. Justice without judgment. And so, I couldn't blame God and I couldn't blame the devil. Because I don't believe in the devil at all. But my apologies to you Catholics. I don't believe in the devil. And I don't believe in a God of judgment, punishment, reward. I believe in a God of love and a great law of justice without judgment. And I can go right down the middle of the road with the law of justice without judgment. I reap what I sow. Not what you sow. I reap what I sow. And if I sow slop, I reap slop. And I can go right down the middle of the road with that. But I can't go any place with a God of judgment. Because what God knows is. And if God knew left field, I'd still be out there. And if God knew sin, I'd still be a sinner. Because what God knows is. I love the Jewish word for God. It's Yahweh. It's not spelled like Yahweh, but it's pronounced like Yahweh. It's got a lot of letters in it, don't belong. Hebrew. But it's pronounced right. Yahweh. And it means that which is. And it means everything that is. Everything that is, God is. Everything. He's not only me and you, he's the rattlesnake. And the skunk. And the hop toad. And the tree. Incidentally, I just got back from our nation's capital. And the trees are absolutely fantastic. Ethereal. What of you back there now with all the leaves turned? I was 2 weeks too early, or three, when I went home. And there were just touches of color in the leaves. But back at Washington, D.C., the trees were absolutely fantastic. It's wonderful to be there again after the leaves turn. I grew up with that, you know. But anyway, I can go right down the middle of the road with a law of justice without judgment. We reap what we sow. And if we don't like what's coming back into our lives, we must change what we are sowing, what we're pouring in. We can't plant radishes and get cucumbers. It don't work like that. I'm glad he missed me. So, I started 36 years and 10 months ago with all my I wants gone and all my excuses gone. And I fired me right off the bat because I had been the master of ceremonies and the star of the show for 43 years. And I said to me, sir, we have taken your counsel for 43 years. And it's led us into the gates of insanity and death. Through the gates of insanity and death. And we're firing you. And we're going to headquarters. We got to have a new manager. We're going to headquarters. And I was full of cliches. I knew them all, practically. You know, if we read another book, it says, fear not, a little flock. It's Father's good pleasure to give us the kingdom. It says, take no thought of tomorrow. What you'll eat, what you'll drink, where will all used to be clothed. Your heavenly Father knoweth what you have need of before you ask him. It says, consider the lilies of the field, how they grow. They toil not, neither do they spin. And yet I say unto you that even Solomon in all his glory was not arrayed like one of these. Many more of them that I can quote. And I said to me, how am I going to know if these things are true? And the answer seemed to be obvious. The only way that I will ever know that they're true is the way that you and I know that Alcoholics Anonymous and Al-Anon work if we work the program. If we don't work the program, we don't know. How many times do you hear? I tried Al-Anon, didn't work for me. I tried Alcoholics Anonymous, didn't work for me. Of course it didn't. It don't work for anybody. It's a way to do something. It says here are the steps we took. It don't say here are the steps we heard read. That we read. That we learned by heart. That we interpreted. It don't say that. Many of you have heard me say that in the early days here in Los Angeles, we had a guy that sold interpretations of the steps. And he made a real good living until he got drunk. We didn't hear much of him after that. The only way we'll know that the programs work is to work it. We work them and they work, and we don't work them and they don't work. So I said to me, how am I going to know whether these things are true or not? And the answer seemed to be very clear. You got to do it and find out. And I started doing it. Now, I have had no business at all since January 1946. I come back to that. But I don't think it's quite right. Because it took me 6 years after I came to my first meeting to discover that I had a God of my very own. And I didn't come to my first meeting until I woke up after my sojourn in hell from 1941 to 46. So I guess I didn't come here in 46. I'm getting confused myself. But anyway, I came and stayed, and I'm still here. And I came for one reason, and one reason only. Because I had one piece of unfinished business, and that was to rub out the record that I had made in the last 20 years. I didn't want my wife and kids to remember me as nothing but a tongue-chewing, babbling, idiot drunk. So I must use whatever time I had left, rubbing out the record. And I started trying to rub out the record. And in order to find out how not to drink right now, I had to find a way. And the second miracle, the first miracle, when I came to that morning, was it came to alive. And that wasn't necessary because I had done everything to promote my demise, but somehow I hadn't died. And so I came to alive. And when I started thinking, how am I going to not drink right now? I remembered that Mrs. C had found Jack Alexander's article. in the Saturday Evening Post in 41. And I'd read it. And I remembered two things about it. And I'd never remembered it from 41 to 46. 5 years, I hadn't remembered one thing about it. But that morning, I remembered that I'd read it. Remembered two things about it, that drunks helped drunks and didn't drink. And they called it Alcoholics Anonymous. And I said to me, if I ever live to get out of this bed, I'll find AA. And immediately, my little period of sanity was gone. I was sickened to death, drunk, and insane. And I had a lot of dying to do, but from the moment of commitment until right now, I have not had a drink or a sedating or tranquilizing pill. Now, this is the great significance of the one thing that it is impossible to talk about intelligently. You can't do it. I've been doing it, trying to do it, for 36 years and 10 months. And I'm accused of being a water walker. Well, I would have to because I can't swim. Every member of my family can swim like a fish, but me. And I swim like a dog. You know? So if I hadn't gone someplace, I'd better walk on the water. So if I'm going to Catalina, either walk over or fly. Anyhow, what I want to say is, from the moment of commitment until right now, I've never had a drink or pill. And I've had a life that is impossible to sell to anybody. Because I haven't wanted anything for me. Do you hear me? Now, anybody that's intelligent knows better than that. It's not normal not to want something. It's not normal not to be going someplace. You know. It's not normal not to believe them when they say we've got to be this, have that, and be known as before we can live. But I haven't had to do that for 42 years and 10 months. I'm wrong. 36 years and 10 months. I'm wrong a great deal tonight. That's the reason you put me on here first. So she can straighten me out when I sit down. And I'm going to sit down in a minute. So, I started going about my father's business 36 years and 10 months ago. And everything that I had tried so desperately to bring about in my life and quit trying to bring about in my life has come into my life. For instance, without making one move and without even knowing that it was happening, I got rich in the same business I'd been in for years and engineered on my own two. A failure as a father, a husband, an alcoholic, a businessman. Every department of life I failed trying to bring this about. And it never came about until after I quit trying to bring it about. And I discovered that it already happened. I got rich. I quit trying to go any place. I've been all over the world. Every place I've wanted to go, I've been. My son tells me that there's some pretty places in the Orient. And I never was inclined to go to the Orient. But I might even go yet. Because he says there's some pretty places over there. But anyhow, it came about. I quit running my own life and my wife's life and the kids' life, and we've become a family. So, I am big on this thing of surrender. Get the hell out of your own way. Self-thinking is insanity. Now I'm going to tell you why I've concluded that. That is, why the conclusions I've come to since I started looking at these things that have come about. And I've learned most of it from non-people. From my blue jays and my hummingbirds and my fish, my salmon and my swallows. You know that everything outside of my window is tickled to death to be what it is, and it knows how. And I rock them on Sundays. They don't go to church. They don't. They just go about their business, and they know about their business. You know, I sent my oldest kid to college. Sent both of them, but one of them took chemistry. He took chemistry through Beverly High School. And when he got to college, he took chemistry. I thought he was going back there to get an education. But he was busy. He came out here, and I put him in business. He wanted to go in the business, building business, and I put him in the building business. So he lost all our money. You know? He stopped up there in the air, and there ain't no place to sit. He's flying backwards. I can't fly backwards. Why can't I fly backwards? He's never said that. I've been listening for a lot of years now, and he's never said that though. He don't even watch the guy fly backwards. He don't care. He's not interested in flying backwards. He's interested in being a blue jay. And he knows how. Huh? But you and I were conditioned to believe that we have to improve on God's handiwork. We have to get out there in the salt mine and outthink, outperform, and outmaneuver in order to eke out a miserable living out of an unfriendly universe. Hear me? Well, that's a fine thing to teach a kid. I did it for 43 years. Quit doing it, and everything I ever wanted is mine. Everything that I ever worked towards is mine. After I quit working towards it. So it's my total conviction that when you and I get simple enough to live like a blue jay and enjoy it, to be ourselves and to be true to ourselves, the golden key to this thing called life is rigorous self-honesty. The only approval I will ever need is from right here. And I tried for 43 years to get your approval and ended up without even the approval of my wife and my kids. You see, that's what I accomplished. On my own. And I've had no business except to try to add something to life. To help God's kids do things they need to have done because they want to. And everything that I ever dreamed of is mine in spades. So I have to believe that it's my business to go about his business and it's his business to take care of me. And that is not my business, that's his business. And I highly recommend it. And that is Alcoholics Anonymous, and that is Al-Anon, Al-Ateen. And overeaters and overgamblers. You know? We learn how to live simply. And according to the best we know. Now, I don't have to live according to the best Buddha knew, or Lao Tzu, or Jesus, or somebody. I have to perform the best I know. And when I perform the best I know, something in here approved me. and I'm at peace. And that's our program. Our program and rubbing out a record are equal, identical, and interchangeable. Except that we have a formula. And I think we have the finest formula that was ever conceived in the mind of man through the grace of God. Not only for obtaining and maintaining sobriety, but for the good life and for self-discovery. And that's what it's all about, self-discovery. Not self-improvement, self-discovery. Because when we discover ourselves, we discover our very own God along with it. You see? And we're no longer apart from, we're part of. And that's it. Equal, identical, and interchangeable. Because you rub out a record doing something for somebody without a price tag on it. In Alcoholics Anonymous and Al-Anon and Alateen, we share our experience, strength, and hope with each other. In order that we might solve our common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism or from the effects of alcoholism. And it's a fantastic thing. And it is limitless because we're looking at infinity. We will never get this program. We'll never get it. Because it is infinite. An infinite Father God, an infinite child, you and me. And an infinite journey, life. Don't be afraid of it. God bless you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chuck. As most of you know, Elsa founded the meeting that we're celebrating the 24th anniversary of 24 years ago, and I'm very happy to introduce all of you to her now. Elsa.
I am Elsa, and I'm a very grateful member of Al-Anon. Hi. I don't like to follow him. I tried to talk him out of doing it that way, but they wouldn't do it. So here I am. He does something to me. I don't know what it is. Maybe it's something that's left over from that old past, that old thing that I used to be, where I needed his approval so terribly. And everything that I did really was for his approval. And that's one of the things that Al-Anon has been trying to teach me not to do anymore. To be able to learn how to live comfortably, peacefully, and joyously with me. And not have to be in competition with him or with you or with anyone else. I must admit that that doesn't always hold true. Because I find myself going up and down and up and down. And the longer I live, the more I seem to go up and down. And my group knows that I've been having a little problem with myself recently. And I'm kind of glad, in a way, that I do have a problem occasionally. Because anyway, it keeps me from getting too fat-headed because I've been around so long. And well, I can go into my group and admit that I'm suffering from that old disease of I'm not getting my just due. I'm not getting my proper respect. I. And it gets a little rough sometimes. But I do know this, that this program has given me something that nothing else under God's green earth could have given me. Because I came into Al-Anon totally out of any real feeling of self-worth. I know there are lots of Al-Anons in this room that probably understand exactly what I'm talking about, because so many of us have this same experience. But let me go back a little bit and give you just a little idea of where I came from. Chuck told you that I'm an only child, which I think has about six strikes against me to begin with, because I never had to share with anybody. And I think that those of you who have brothers and sisters have a great deal to your credit, because you have learned how to give more than an only child can learn. I didn't talk about this for a long time. In fact, I've only talked about it recently, because I was so afraid you'd think that I was bragging. This has been one of the difficulties that I've had all my life. I've been afraid to tell you that I was good at anything for fear you'd think I was bragging. And that, too, is ego. Because we non-alcoholics, I don't know whether you AAs do or not, but we non-alcoholics very definitely suffer from a great big fat ego that takes its... I'm not worthy. But it isn't just as much ego as to say I'm a hot shot, because it's all self-thinking anyway. But the thing that I want to... I don't know what's happened to my voice tonight. The thing that I want to tell you, because I think it has a great deal to do with what I became like later on. My mother was quite a famous singer, and she had some hope that I would follow in her footsteps. So from an early age, I was trained on the piano and with voice. And I thought that this was something that I was going to do. And when I went to high school, incidentally, I went to Hollywood High, and that probably puts a mark on me right away. I went as a very shy, very inhibited kid, scared to death to speak to anybody on the school grounds unless they spoke to me first. I don't know why I was the way I was, because I came from a very loving family, a very strict family, but a very loving family. So I didn't make many friends in the early years of high school. In my junior year, one of my few friends dared me to do something. Well, I'm just stubborn enough that if you dare me to do something, I'm apt to do it. She dared me to try out for one of the plays. At that time, and I think still is, Hollywood High is very well known for its drama department. Many of our big stars have come from Hollywood High. And it scared the living daylights out of me, but I wasn't about to not take a dare. So I tried out for the show that year and surprised everybody, including me, because I got the part I tried out for. Now, the only reason that I tell you this is because it lit a spark in me that wouldn't be denied. And I went on then in my junior year and my senior year in high school, forgetting everything else that I was trying to learn in high school, because I was hell-bent to be an actress. And in those days, we had in Southern California what we called the Shakespearean contest. I don't think there's anyone in this room old enough to remember those days. It was a long time ago. I graduated from high school in 1920. That'll date me, won't it? But anyway, the bug had bit me enough that I tried out for this Shakespearean contest. And I won the school. And when you won the school, you go to the city, and if you win that, you go up to Berkeley and go for the state. And I won all three. How, I will never know, except that in those days, I had a fantastically beautiful speaking voice. I don't today, but I did then. And in those days, we had no microphones. And you had to be able to speak and project enough that people could hear you, because the final contest was held in the big open-air theater at Berkeley. And believe me, it's big. And scared the living daylights out of me, but I managed to get by. And nothing would do from then on, but I was going to be an actress, and I almost broke my mother's heart because she had so wanted me to become a singer. I then, when I graduated from high school, went to UCLA. And this will date me if nothing else does. It was in the old school on Vermont before they ever moved out to Westwood. A bunch of kids, you know. You don't know where I came from. And of all things, I went to UCLA to study Greek drama. And I was doing fairly well in Greek drama until I met the young man that you just heard talk. And that was all, brother. That was all. Because I think, without a doubt, he was one of the most beautiful men I had ever seen in my life. He was the handsomest thing you ever saw. He's white-headed today, but you should have seen him then. He had black hair and black eyes and a mouth that curled up at the corners. Alcoholism did something to the corners of that mouth. Forgive me, Chuck. But he was, without a doubt, the handsomest guy I'd ever met in my life. And I fell head over heels in love with this man. And nothing else would do, but that was what I was going to continue to do, was to marry this guy and have a beautiful, wonderful life that so many young girls envision when they first get married. Having had very little experience, I thought that life was going to be one of the most beautiful things in the world. We were going to have beautiful children, and life was going to be a bowl of roses, you know. And everything was just going to be fine. And I think every young girl usually goes into marriage with that kind of a feeling, that this is going to be the most gorgeous part of her life. I did not know, and of course couldn't tell at that time, that Chuck was an alcoholic, because he wasn't drinking that heavily then. He drank, but he only drank occasionally. And he had at that time what I choose to call a hollow leg. He could drink and drink and drink, and it didn't show, because he had a fantastic physique. He had been quite an athlete, and he was strong and healthy. And it just plain didn't show for a long time. But since alcoholism is a progressive illness, naturally it got worse and worse as time went on. I think that there's something that is so ugly about alcoholism, because in those days especially, it was very, very difficult for those of us who lived with alcoholics, because we had no way of knowing what was the matter. Nobody knew then what an alcoholic was or why. In fact, you never heard the word alcoholic. They just called them common, low-down, lousy drunks, and that was all. And everybody thought that they were doing this deliberately, and if they would just pull themselves up by their bootstraps, if they would just stand up and be a man, they wouldn't have to drink like this. We had no more idea than the man in the moon what was wrong with the alcoholic. The very thing that Chuck was trying to tell you when he was talking up here. So naturally, we did everything wrong in trying to combat it. Everything that we did was wrong. Everything we said was wrong. And we weren't very nice about it, believe me. And when you're not nice about what's going on around you in your home, you begin to change. And you don't stay the sweet young thing that you thought you were. And you become a person who uses language that we had no idea that we would ever use. I was raised to be a lady, but I became very unladylike in those years, and I think most of us do, especially when we don't know what we're up against. I did many of the things that I imagine that some of you have done during those years. It's not my business to tell Chuck's story. It's my business to tell mine and what happened to me. There were many things that I tried to do to get him to stop drinking. And I used to think if there just was something that I could put in his booze that would make him so sick that he wouldn't ever touch the stuff again. I didn't even know about these drying out places that they had in those days where they still do this, fill them full of booze until they get so sick they can't stand it and then put them on Inabuse. But it scared the living daylights out of me. And then I thought, well, maybe I could find something that I could put in his drink that nobody would find out and I could kill him. I thought about that on numerous occasions because there is nothing lovely about an alcoholic. I think it is without a doubt the ugliest disease there is. The thing that I have had to learn and that I have to talk about sometimes is that the drunk passed out on the floor that is so ugly from the outside, who doesn't want to be the way he is, who is caught in the grip of something over which he has absolutely no control. And underneath all that ugly exterior is still God's child. And that's the thing that's so beautiful about this AA program, because when you watch an alcoholic who is so ugly and so caught up in this terrible, terrible thing called alcoholism, and watch them change, and watch them again become the person they should have been all along, and in many, many cases, better than they have ever been, then you begin to believe that there is something to this AA program and this way of life, that you and I, until we come into Al-Anon, have no way of knowing how it works or what it does. And we watch the change in these people. But the thing that I want to tell you about is that the time finally came with me when it seemed as though there was nothing that I could do to get this man to straighten up and fly right. He was as near death as anybody can be, or so close to insanity, because he was seeing things that weren't there and having alcoholic convulsions. And I thought that he was going to die anyway and that that was hopeless. And I did the thing that we tried to teach people to do in Al-Anon and didn't know what it was doing. I gave up. I gave up the necessity for Chuck to straighten up and fly right. And you know, the funny part of it was that when I gave up the necessity for him to straighten up and fly right, he straightened up and flew right. And I am convinced that that's the way this thing works. That when you and I let go of that terrible, terrible necessity to run somebody else's life, to make them be what we think they ought to be, so often they become the person that we wanted them to be, because the alcoholic I have had to learn works by opposites. And the more we push, the more they go in the opposite direction. And it takes a long time for those of us who are married to alcoholics, and I don't care whether they're male or female, they seem to be very much the same. The longer we live with them, the more we try to push, the more we find out that they are not pushable. And maybe if you get some sense about you, you'll quit trying. But the thing that I really want to talk about, and I don't want to take too awfully much time because I think when there are two speakers, sometimes gets a little monotonous. When Chuck came to AA, there was no Al-Anon. For 6 long years after he came to AA, before Al-Anon was born. And when we finally had Lois Wilson out to the coast to give us an idea of what she and Bill had been talking about, this necessity that the families of alcoholics find a way to live comfortably and peacefully with themselves according to the same program that AA was using. And she lit a fire under all of us that were sitting at the old 6300 Club on Wilshire Boulevard across from the May Company. And 3 of us were sitting at a table and we said, you know, Beverly Hills needs this very desperately. Let's start a meeting in Beverly Hills, which we proceeded to do in our home. There's a young man down here in the front, second row that was a friend of my youngest son, going to school with him and was a friend of in the highway. And remembers, I think, very well the beginnings of that program. We did what everybody who doesn't know what they're doing tries to do. We learned by guess and by gosh, by trial and error. We had nothing to go on. All we had were the 12 steps, and we didn't know what to do about them. We used to spend a good part of our time talking about them. And it took us a while to learn that what we were trying to do had absolutely nothing to do with them. It had to do with us, the families of alcoholics. For us to learn how to live comfortably, peacefully, and joyously by ourselves without the necessity to be bothered by or try to understand or try to push or try to make the alcoholic perform the way we think they should. And we had to learn, as I say, by guess and by gosh. And after that meeting had been going for several years, we sold our home in Beverly Hills and moved down here to Laguna Beach, where we live right up here on the hill. Chuck had been sober quite a few years by that time. He had already been delegate to New York. And I thought I knew a great deal about this program. I had been going to AA with him for all these years, listening. I knew the book backwards and forwards and through the middle. It took quite a little while for us to get some literature of our own, which we have a great deal of now. And I moved here to Laguna almost 26 years ago. Now, at that time, there was absolutely no Al-Anon in this area. There was nothing in Laguna at all. There was one meeting in Corona Del Mar and one in Santa Ana. And that was it. Very little AA. The Wednesday night meeting across the street here had been going for some time, some years. But that was all there was in Laguna. And nothing really outside of Laguna to speak of. And I thought I was going to be the happiest person in the world because we had finally been able to buy the home of our dreams. Up here high on the hill with a perfectly beautiful view of the little town of Laguna and the ocean and Catalina Island. And I thought we would be the happiest that we've ever been. But I didn't count on the fact that Chuck's business was still in Los Angeles and he was going in every day. And I think every woman here knows exactly what happened to me. Because he's a very busy man, and he's been a popular speaker for all these years. And he didn't have time to come home to dinner like he'd been used to when we were in Beverly Hills, and then I would go to the meeting with him. So here I sit in my dream house, most of the time all by myself. And I think every woman here knows exactly what happened to me. It didn't take too long for me to slip back into the old stinking thinking. And I put pressure on Chuck to slow down. And he tried because he could see how miserable I was. But after about 6 months of refusing to talk for this group or that group and confining himself maybe to a couple of meetings a week, we were sitting around the table at just this time of year, Thanksgiving. And I always cooked Thanksgiving dinner. And the children were there, and we were all sitting around the table, and Chuck said, "I've got to say something." He said, "I have seen how miserable your mother was and how terribly lonely she's been. And I've tried to slow down and give her more of my time, but I'm getting so uncomfortable I can't stand it." He said, "When AA asks me to do something, I have got to go because this program is my life. This program is my love. Without it, I have nothing. And you will have to adjust yourself to that. But when somebody asks me to do something in this program, I have got to go." I didn't like it. In fact, it made me quite angry. So you can understand what frame of mind I was in at that time. I had slipped back so far that it's unbelievable even to me when I look at it. Because I'd had quite a few years, you see. Not only 6 years going to AA, but 4 or 5 years going to Al-Anon. You'd think by that time that I would have had enough under my belt to keep me happy and free, but it did not. Because, you see, the thing that I have found out is that I started that meeting with a good motive, didn't I? I started it to help somebody. That's not a bad motive. But it's not good enough. I had to start this one because I needed you, and I needed you desperately. And for the first time in my life, I became teachable. And the only way that I found out what I had to do was by hurting so daggone badly that I couldn't stand it. Just couldn't stand it. And I suddenly remembered something that had happened in the first year of Chuck's sobriety when he was asked to talk on Christmas. And I raised hell, wouldn't you? He didn't have any right to make a date on Christmas. It was a family day. Kids were going to be there, and he ought to be home. But if you know Chuck, when he makes a date, he keeps it. So I planned an early dinner, and the children were there. But one of the things that you have taught me that is so invaluable, you have finally given me a sense of humor back, if I ever had one. I don't know whether I ever had one or not. But at least I have developed one now where I can enjoy things. Because every time I think about that Christmas, I have to laugh. Because about, oh, maybe an hour after we'd finished dinner, our kids all took off. They had places they wanted to go and things they wanted to do. They're young, and they had a bunch of parties that they wanted to go to. So they left, and we were left alone anyway. So what I was raising so much hell about, I don't know. But I got dressed, much against my will, and went down to the meeting with Chuck. And at that meeting, there were two very, very drunk winos that had just been pulled out from under the Santa Monica Pier. They made a lot of noise, I remember, at that meeting, but nothing really happened, particularly. I'm seeing all this in hindsight. And apparently, hindsight is the only way you and I learn anything. Only way we seem to be able to see anything. Because I could see very clearly that the following year he was asked to talk again on Christmas, and I went a little more willingly this time, not too much so, but lo and behold, and this is the thing that changed my life, one of those winos was leading that meeting and the other one read the steps, and they told us afterwards that they had not heard one word that Chuck had said that year before. They were too drunk. The thing they did remember, and that did something for them, was the fact that a husband and wife would leave their family on Christmas and come to share at an AA meeting. And for the first time in my life, I believe, after all these years, I began to see what you and I have in this program. The beauty of it, the charm of it, the love of it, the whole thing that is so fantastic. And that's why, when I finally got to the place where I became teachable, my youngest son gave me the answer. He said, "Mom, why don't you start another meeting?" And you know, it had never occurred to me that since I needed one down here so badly that I knew how, I'd already started one. It never had occurred to me that I could do it again. But this group here has saved my life.